Hey everyone, welcome to 10 Movies, the podcast where we dig into the work of one actor through 10 of their movies.
Woohoo!
This week we are talking about The Gentlemen, starring Matthew McConaughey, 2020.
Out in theaters now, a first for the 10 Movies podcast.
That's right, we really kind of do retrospectives. This one is out in the theaters where you can pay money to see it.
We're releasing this too late for you to actually base your movie-going decision on the podcast, and too early for it to be available on streaming services. So right in the sweet spot where it makes no sense.
Directed by Guy Ritchie.
A return to form for Guy Ritchie, who began his career making British gangster films.
That's right.
Then made a whole bunch of Hollywood stuff, and now, almost inexplicably, has returned to making British gangster films.
I'm going to disagree with you for a second and say that all his movies are gangster movies. They're just kind of disguised differently.
What?
I find myself basically a connoisseur of Guy Ritchie films.
Really?
Yeah, weirdly enough.
Huh, who knew?
I know. But I was worried when we picked The Gentlemen because I didn't really know if it was going to be a Matthew McConaughey film, but it is very much a Matthew McConaughey film.
See, again, I don't know that I agree with you. I feel like McConaughey, despite being the ostensibly the protagonist, I find he's a little lost in this film.
Do you really?
Yes. McConaughey was adrift on a sea of more interesting characters and actors.
I might agree with you on there, but I still think it's a McConaughey film. I don't know if I can do an accurate summary of this film.
Yes, we like to summarize the plot. And once again, most of you will not have seen this in the theaters, cannot see it yet on streaming, so you'll probably already tune out because you don't know what we're talking about or care. But yeah, the plot is convoluted in the manner of a classic Guy Ritchie film.
That's right. I am going to give you the Cliff Notes version of the plot, which is there's a American gangster in England.
Mickey Pearson.
I'm glad you remember his name. I did not.
It's a very British name, even though he is American.
And he's you know, apparently a king of pot in England. If you want good weed in England, this is the guy you go to.
Go to McConaughey.
And he wants to get out of the pot-selling business, and through a very convoluted series of events, comes very close to getting out of the pot business, but then does not get out of the pot business.
He wants to sell off his gigantic country-straddling weed empire to spend more time with his wife, and because he's just been in the game a long time. I think an important bit about not so much the plot of the movie, but the movie is structured very much around a conversation where Hugh Grant plays Fletcher, this sort of villainous, insidious quasi-journalist, quasi-private eye, who is the framing story for the whole movie is that he has broken into Mickey's right-hand man's very fancy apartment, posh, I suppose you would say over there, and is. We keep cutting back to them having this long conversation.
And it's really interesting framing for the film. Like, I think that whether or not you like Guy Ritchie and whether or not you like these movies, he does great things with structure, right? Like, his films are always about structure because it's really pulling past, present, future together at the same time to tell a story.
Yeah, they're all chopped up out of order and things are kind of coming at you like, oh, wait, go back 2 days kind of stuff.
Yeah, it really is about telling a story. But that's the summary of it, right? There's a lot of British gangster stuff that happens in there.
Yeah, and I don't know that the plot, you know, again, if you've seen any of these movies, you know, the plot is not really, it's really orthogonal to your enjoyment of the film. You know, a bunch of crazy stuff happens. You're not really expected to necessarily follow along.
And it's about character and it's about relationships. And Guy Ritchie very much cares about the relationships of gangsters to each other.
Yeah, so I think, yeah, so McConaughey plays like sort of the chief gangster, and there are, if I remember correctly, there's really like two different other gangster factions, both of whom are trying to gain control of his weed empire, and rather than simply purchase it outright in the manner of above-board capitalists, they're resorting to various violent and nefarious means to either get it away from him without paying his asking price or drive down his asking price. And again, in the manner of a Guy Ritchie movie, there's a lot of sort of secondary and tertiary characters who have, agendas and motives of their own, all of whom are willing to resort to violence.
Right, but Matthew McConaughey is, even though he might not have the most screen time, is kind of the principal lead gangster. Like, he's the king, right?
He's the king,
and it is about whether or not the king stays on top. And spoiler alert, he does.
So it sounds like you enjoyed the film, The Gentlemen.
I did. I enjoyed the film, despite the fact that it is kind of racist. Like, there is an unsettling strain of, like, Orientalism in there that's not cool.
There are, like, overtly racist moments, several of them.
Yeah.
There's overtly homophobic moments. But, we can jump into this a little bit if you want. But doesn't it feel like those things are... It seems to be like those things are presented not as the film's ideology in any way, but just as like artifact of character.
Right. And Ritchie does that all the time. And I think you're right. I think we will get into it a little bit later. But yeah, I did enjoy the film just because I like Guy Ritchie movies, right? It's not that I know exactly what's going to happen, but I know what the structure is. I know what to expect. I know it's all building up to something. It's not the best Guy Ritchie movie that I've seen, but I enjoyed it. What about you?
I liked it, too. I like these Guy Ritchie movies. I like Guy Ritchie making a wacky British gangster movie. If you've seen Snatch, if you've seen Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, those are basically the same movie, and now he's made that movie again with just a different set of amoral scoundrels.
Oh, my goodness. You call them amoral? They're very moral.
No!
Yes!
They're scoundrels, right? They're all villains. So every Guy Ritchie movie like this has... every character is a badass. There's different tiers of badassery, but they're all badasses. Mm-hmm. So that always happens. They're always all working at cross purposes. They're all scoundrels. They're all amoral. And one thing that he does that, again, I think this is very much a hallmark of these movies, he always introduces these various notes of chaos. Like something unexpected always happens because of the things these people do and the way that they do them.
Right.
So I liked it. I enjoyed watching it. It felt a little superfluous there. I could have just rewatched, Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels and enjoyed it just as much.
Okay, so I'll agree with you in the fact that this is basically the same movie. The place where we very much disagree is about the amorality. I think that his characters are very moral because every single Guy Ritchie movie to me that is about gangsters and about like this British underworld is all about people and a moral code. That's what this is all about.
It's a moral code.
Yes, it is. Maybe it's not a moral code, but it's the code of gangsters.
There's this. They constantly reference this code of behavior by which they expect one another to behave. But they don't, and none of them really follow it.
Yes, they do, though, but it's always about honor among thieves. Like, that's what all of his films are about. Huh. Snatch, Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, and The Gentleman especially is, if you made a deal, you have to live up to that deal. We see, throughout the film, there's all these little clues to it. I think the most important one is, and again, spoiler alert if you haven't seen the film, at the very end where Colin Farrell is kind of telling Charlie Hunnam, hey, dude, I'm out. I have served you guys enough. But then he sees that these two dudes are coming to kill Charlie Hunnam, and he's like, oh, man, this is like an honor among thieves kind of thing. So he shoots the two Russians in the back.
Yeah, Colin Farrell plays one of my favorite characters in the movie. He plays this guy who coaches a boys club.
Yeah,
And he's like ostensibly not a gangster, but clearly has like a gangster past or at least gangster powers. Charlie Hunnam plays, I don't remember the character's name, but he plays
Ray.
Ray, the right-hand man of Mickey Pearson. Colin Farrell, the coaches, his boys have gotten into some trouble. They owe a debt to Mickey Pearson and his empire. Colin Farrell goes to save them. He's like, I won't even do his accent. But he agrees to do some bad gangster shit to get his boys out of trouble. and he keeps saying and they're clearly impressed by him. They want him to do more. And so at one point he says, I'm going to do three things and then I'm out. Much respect, but... And then he kills some Russian gangsters. And then he looks at Charlie Hunnam and he holds up four fingers as if to say, I have now done a fourth thing for you.
Yeah.
That's a great bit.
It's a great bit, but it is also this is about honor among thieves. And what makes you on the side of Mickey here is that Mickey is trying to do the right thing, right? He's trying to do the right thing by his lady. He's trying to do the right thing by the business that he's built, selling it to this dude.
He's trying to get paid. He's not trying to do the right thing. It's not like he has employees or a benefits program.
No, but but there is a very strict code here. You don't kill people unnecessarily. The one huge violation, right, is that...
a civilian gets killed by accident.
No.
Oh, that's what you're saying.
No, they don't care that civilians get killed by accident.
They do care because it has negative consequences.
Right. Not about the morality of killing civilians, though. The code I was going to say is it's when Henry Golding, who plays Dry Eye, tries to violate Mickey's wife. That is... you don't do that, right? You can come after me, you can come after my boys, but if you try to sexually assault my wife, that's a violation of the code.
I guess. So yeah, there is very much this code of behavior that people observe. They constantly violate it, and that is sort of a thin pretext for committing violence on one another. And I suppose that there's a sort of a rough idea of justice, right? The movie is kind of on the side of the slightly, the gangsters who do obey this code and a little more come out on top in the end, and the gangsters who are more treacherous receive a variety of horrible physical punishments in the end.
Yeah, so there's good gangsters and there's bad gangsters.
But they're not gentlemen. Like, the title of the movie is clearly mocking their pretensions, right?
I think so, but I think that it also is saying that there are ways to be gentlemen.
You think it's an honor among thieves sort of thing.
I very much think it's an honor among thieves kind of thing. And I'll say, because I've seen so many Guy Ritchie movies.
I didn't
movies.
Know you were such a Guy Ritchie stan.
I didn't either until I watched this movie, and I was like, oh, this is basically King Arthur. You know he did a King Arthur movie?
I did not know that.
Also starring Charlie Hunnam.
Is it a British gangster sort of movie?
And it's basically a British gangster
oh, well,
movie.
I want to watch it now.
But
he did Aladdin, which was not a British gangster movie.
Oh, I haven't seen that one.
You'd like it. It's good.
But I think this is a good segue to talk about the cast, because this movie is stacked with casting.
Yes, so many cast.
Yes.
So much cast in this movie. A full set of cast, I would say, speaking as a film buff.
We will get to Matthew McConaughey a little bit later, but you have Charlie Hunnam, who plays Ray, Michelle Dockery, who plays his wife,
the
Rosalind.
The lady from Downton Abbey. A little lost in this film. There's not, like, a strong character who doesn't do a whole lot and isn't really given a whole lot to do with.
No, yeah. This is nothing against her as an actress. She's just not given a lot to do in this film. Jeremy Strong, who plays Matthew, who's the person who's going to buy his weed empire.
Yeah, he's the first crime lord sort of vying to own the weed empire.
Yes, we already talked about Colin Farrell, plays Coach.
Really great. One of the best two character actors turning a performance in this movie.
Does really wonderful. Henry Golding plays Dry Eye.
Right, yes. A lot of very commanding presence on screen. Probably the most overtly villainous of the many characters.
Yeah, very one note, no dimension. And then Hugh Grant, who plays Fletcher.
Incredible. Amazing. Stole the movie.
I really liked Hugh Grant
in
this
film.
He's
so good. He's like, Hugh Grant has such a, like from, you know, days of yore, this such, like, really almost, this very typecast, very persona. And, like, you always like him and stuff, but he's self-deprecating, and he's handsome, and he's wry, and he's Hugh Grant.
Right.
But in this, you wouldn't even know. Like, he's doing a whole different accent, a whole different vibe, a whole different persona. He's so, like, you can't take your eyes off. He's so, like, oily and you know, and gelatinous.
And he has to be, because he really is the narrative conceit of the entire film, is Fletcher telling this story while we watch it unfold
yeah,
in
totally.
Front of
Fletcher
us.
Fletcher is, you know, Charlie Hunnam's character. What's that guy's
Ray.
Name? Ray. He knows all this stuff, of course, but he's, you know, Fletcher's saying, well, let me tell you a story, love. And he's sort of, you know, unfolding all the things he knows. And interestingly, when you think about it, so Hugh Grant and Charlie Hunnam filmed, like, their scene is just one super extended, it's basically a monologue from Hugh Grant,
mm-hmm.
and it's cut, so as viewers were seeing it all chopped up, but they just were on a set, and Hugh Grant just talked and was in that character for like 2 hours, and then that becomes the framing story. When you think about it like that, it's even more impressive.
It is really great. I think Hugh Grant is wonderful in this film, and I think that it's his, I know this is not a Hugh Grant podcast, but until it becomes one, very quickly, this is like his third act, right? Like, he's gone and done the romantic
the Hugh
comedy
Grant
thing.
Songs.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's like, if you've seen Paddington 2.
Yeah, an excellent film in which he was a great villain.
And he's very good in it, so he's very much a good villain. I want to talk about Michelle Dockery for a second, and I will try not to be shrill about this, but again, not given a lot to do. She's literally the only woman
in the movie, yeah.
In the entire film.
Guy Ritchie movies are just dudes, hyper-verbal,
yeah.
amoral dudes, all interacting with each other, talking and attacking.
Exactly. It literally is just about how men relate to men, and there are absolutely no women around unless that woman is a wife, and then that wife, her honor must be protected,
yeah,
and
yeah.
she can be tough and sassy and all this other stuff, but it's very one-note, one-dimensional.
And, again, I don't think this is her fault, but, like, she's the least interesting character.
This is like the Sahara problem, right? There's literally only room for one female on the entire ship.
For those of you who do not have master's degrees in film criticism, the Sahara problem is what we in the business refer to based on the Matthew McConaughey Penelope Cruz vehicle, Sahara.
I'm glad you're here to provide context. Can we move on to Henry Golding's character, Dry
yes.
Eye?
Yes, let's talk about Dry Eye.
So Dry Eye is super evil, super villainous. But
is he more evil than, like, he's a little more, his evil is a little more flat than some of the others, but he's not any more or less evil than everybody else.
I think he's supposed to be more evil because he doesn't follow this code.
He is betraying. So he's the his faction is led by Lord George, mm-hmm. who he is betraying.
Yeah.
By going kind of around his back and, you know, trying to do this deal directly with Mickey.
Yeah. And this is kind of where Guy Ritchie's I don't know why the movie needs this racism in it, though. Like, you could have just had Dry Eye be Chinese and kind of leave it at that. But there's a lot of jokes at his expense. There's a lot of, like, crass Orientalism in there. And I understand, like, that it's a reflection of the character's prejudices, but his films always have that in them.
Yeah, sometimes it's just like, oh, these are working class, insensitive, like British men. They say things like Chinaman. But yeah, there's another running joke where, like, one of the characters, I guess, is Vietnamese and his name is Fuck.
Yeah.
And it's not even funny, but the movie comes back to it at least twice. Yeah, so there's a difference to me between, like, a character being casually racist and the movie itself. And I think that the latter is an example of that to no good end.
Again, I don't know why any of it needs to be in there. And I think that it actually weakens the movie.
Well, while we're on the topic of the movie's casual racism.
Yeah.
I looked at a few reviews and a couple people had remarked on, like, the movie having, like, a homophobic strain in it as well. So Hugh Grant's character, I don't think he's played as, you know, overtly gay or campily gay. At one point, he puts his hand on Ray's knee, and in that moment, like, oh, maybe or that, you know, maybe this character's gay and he's making a bit of sort of a clumsy pass. And then I can't remember Matthew. I didn't really read him as gay. He has this sort of very, like, fey affect,
right?
But he has a wife in one scene, or it seemed like he did.
To that degree, I don't even. I think it's just about masculinity, right? I don't even think it's about homophobia. I think it's about what is masculine and what is not. Like, Guy Ritchie is so obsessed with this idea of, like, English masculinity and the very narrow forms that it's represented that, yeah, it's a reflection of the character's homophobia.
But so those two, so I think that's a good point. Those two, whether they're gay or supposed to be gay or not, they're not masculine in a way that most of their characters are.
Yeah.
Do you think the movie is more contemptuous of those two characters and that's why they're portrayed in these ways?
I don't know if it's intentional or not, but I think Guy Ritchie, the filmmaker, is contemptuous of not that kind of masculinity, right? Because the two characters who are the villains are, like you said, fey, not as, you know, traditionally masculine.
You're right. The movie itself is more contemptuous of these non-masculine men. Again, whether they're gay or not. Yeah, like Matthew is the least masculine by a wide margin. And we're encouraged to see him as being, like, you know, ruthless and Machiavellian, but in the end, he is the most defeated, right? Matthew McConaughey uncovers his plot and visits a truly horrendous punishment on him. But the movie does not visualize, but even just discussing it is really terrifying.
Right, and I don't know if the point is it's because these men are not masculine or it's because they did not live by this honor among thieves code.
Maybe if they had been more masculine, they would have lived by the honor among thieves code.
Are we ready to move on to the Matthew McConaughey-ness of
this film? Felt that Matthew McConaughey was a bit lost in this this garish, flashy joyride of a film, but you felt he was not.
I did not think he was. I bought him as Mickey Pearson. I think that if I had to pick an actor to play an American gangster in England, he's not my first choice, but he did it well.
Well, I think one thing we discussed about McConaughey, like, he's genuinely a strong actor, so especially when he needs or wants to be. And I thought he was believable, but he's playing a very kind of grounded character who felt out of place in this movie. This movie is not it's not a, like, serious, gritty, Scorsese kind of gangster movie.
Yeah.
It's a crazy carnival ride of a movie.
Yeah.
And Mickey Pearson he's sort of keeping his emotions in check, and sometimes he loses his temper, and, like, it almost felt like McConaughey's portrayal belonged to a different movie.
I think he's the straight man in this film.
Yeah, totally.
I think that you're right in that the real star of this film is actually the conversation that's happening between Hugh Grant's Fletcher and Charlie Hunnam's Ray. And that's really the central conceit. And Mickey just kind of moves in and out.
Yeah, they're telling a story about Mickey. Or Hugh Grant is telling a story about Mickey that Ray is, you know, validating or not validating.
Matthew McConaughey is a straight man. But he pulls it off really well. You know, he kind of grounds the character. I don't think that he belongs in a different film. I think that he's just more subdued.
Yeah, he's more subdued than the people around him. At one point, halfway through the film, you haven't actually seen Mickey do anything. There's this great aura of fear and mystique and authority around him. And at one point, you're like, well, these people are so, and I don't know, you like them, but these people are so violent and amoral. They're just like a whole bunch of thugs in nice suits. How does Mickey manage to exert so much control over this world? And then you actually see him resort to these, like, you know, the minimal amount of, like, these people are all professionals, right? So they resort to violence. It's kind of the minimal amount of violence necessary to make something happen. And he does that a few times, and it's believable. Like, you're like, oh, that guy's actually, he's a badass, too.
Yeah, and there's one moment where we don't know if it actually happened or not, but you see Matthew McConaughey kind of lose his shit on Dry-Eye Henry Golding.
See, I think that didn't happen.
I think you're right. I think it didn't happen. But he, again, like, kind of flips on a dime and you're like, okay, now I see what's going on here. And I think Matthew McConaughey did a really good job with it.
Yeah, that scene, there's an unreliable narrator aspect to it where Charlie Hunnam says, that didn't really happen. Hugh Grant's like, well, maybe that didn't happen, sure. But there's a scene later where he poisons Lord George and, you know, pulls a gun on him. And you get the sense of, like, oh, this is actually a person willing to resort to violence.
What else is there to say about Matthew McConaughey?
Well, I would like to talk about Matthew McConaughey's hair.
I was just going to say that.
Well, we'd like to talk about our leading actor's hair, and I did not think his hair was performing full quality work here. I was unhappy about it from scene one.
You know what I also want to talk about? His tan. He had a very American
tan. No one has a tan in London.
No one does.
There's no sun over there. You're right. I hadn't noticed that, but totally. But his hair is this, like,
yeah,
it's sort of swept back in an old school American gangster way.
Right.
But then it's gone, like, wildly blow dried out the back. Just a sea of, like, oily curls or something. It's no
just,
good.
It's kind of slicked back hair and it's kind of curly. I think it works, though.
It's
I
gangster
think it
in the front and party in the back. And I do not think that it works.
He was able to keep the drawl under control, though. He's supposed to play a guy who's been living in England for quite some time. So there is not that much of the Texan drawl that comes through.
Yeah, and his suits were fantastic. Like, everyone in the movie is dressed like a, you know, GQ model, but McConaughey's suits are completely off the charts. They're super.
All right. So did you have a moment in the film that screamed Matthew McConaughey?
Matthew McConaughey moment of the film. Well, you know, I think a hallmark of the Guy Ritchie characters in these movies are they're all very British.
Mm-hmm.
They're all hyperverbal. Like, you know, again, I think this is kind of the fantasy element of it. Like, a lot of these guys who I imagine didn't have a whole lot of, like, schooling or exposure to literary works, nevertheless have a vocabulary of a, you know, of an English grad student, and they're all talking a mile a minute. And that's part of the, like, the fun and the charm of these things. I like that about them. I think McConaughey holds his own in that without, like, mimicking that, right? He doesn't do the hyperverbal, you know, British gangster thing, but, like, he tackles these kind of tortuous script in a way that I think is, like, he kind of makes it his own. He makes it sort of American. He has a much slower, like, more restrained delivery in a way that I think, yeah, I think that he delivers on that character and fits in with these other characters without seeming too out of place or like he's copying them.
I think that's a really good point. I didn't realize that McConaughey, if anything, is a slow talker.
He's a drawler.
Yeah, he's a drawler, and that does not work in Guy Ritchie films, so he did a very good job with that. For me, the most Matthew McConaughey-y moment is a short little scene that they have where with him and Charlie Hunnam, who plays Ray, where McConaughey says, hey, I need you to go find this junky British posh girl, and Ray is kind of pushing back. Like, throughout the entire film, Ray has been like, yes, boss, yes, boss, yes, boss. And, like, this is the first time Ray pushes back. And he's like, I don't want to do it. I don't like junkies. They're dirty. And Matthew McConaughey, you kind of finally see, like, him crack from being, like, Mickey Pearson the gangster to, like, maybe Mickey Pearson the person. And he's like, just do it. He's like, it doesn't matter. You're not going to get dirty. And it's just, like, a fun little charming scene. And I think you can finally see, like, the chemistry between the two characters in that scene.
Does this movie need McConaughey? Do you think he's like, I've got to have McConaughey in a film. I'm going to write something. He can do it. Or was it written just to be an American? Doesn't it really seem necessary, right?
That's so interesting. I think The two gangsters, like the two big gangsters here fighting over the weed empire, are both Americans. So I think that it doesn't need to be American, and I'm not sure why he is. But if you are picking somebody to be like quintessential American guy, like it makes sense to use Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah, maybe Matthew McConaughey's sheer Americanness was supposed to do something in the film that I don't know that it does.
I mean, we've talked about this before in some of the other like McConaughey episodes, most notably Reign of Fire, where if you need a badass American...
I believe you're referring to Reign of Fire! You mispronounced it. Not a big deal. Not a big deal.
Where if you need somebody to play like a badass American, like this is the guy that you're going to.
Yeah, with the possible exception of Tom Cruise. He exudes the most Americanness of any potential leading man.
Yeah, I think there might be some like political commentary in there about how Americans are invading British culture, but I don't know if that's
Yeah,
true.
Like it seems very like you're introduced to him and you get his backstory like, oh, you know, he's kind of like grew up in a working class neighborhood, but managed to get a scholarship to Oxford. He's super smart. So the movie sets it up like his Americanness is going to be important. And as you say, one of the like the primary antagonist is also an American. But it doesn't seem to really be necessary, right? Like the movie would have worked equally well if they had also been English.
Yeah. And it's really weird because this is about kind of immigrants invading that British gangster space. Where does this fit in the Matthew McConaughey canon for you?
Very slight entry. I think as we've discussed before, there's early McConaughey career, full of promise, full of vim, full of vigor. There's the mid-career trough when he's just churning out low-quality garbage. Then there's the late period McConaissance when he's taken on a variety of challenging roles. This feels more like the thing about these movies, like it doesn't feel like a paycheck film for anybody, and it doesn't seem like huge budget or anything. In fact, some of the sets look rather cheap. This movie definitely feels like everyone's just having a good time.
Yeah.
Like everyone's just like, oh, you know, I got all these actors and we're all acting and we're all like chewing this crazy dialogue. So it seems like a thing that they all make because it was fun to make. And, you know, I don't know that it's a particularly important entry in the McConaughey canon.
I don't think it's important, but I do think it's telling because McConaughey is now of a certain age and he plays a gangster of a certain age, right? Like he's...
Yes, his age is important to the film.
Yeah, it isn't like he's playing younger or playing older. Like he's playing somebody who is, you know, well into middle age and thinking about the next arc of his life and what he wants to do. Mm. And I feel like that's a little reflective of a lot of the actors in the film.
Yeah, there's a line in Winter, like overt text to that character, which is interesting because he's not even that old. Like the character, I don't know how old McConaughey is, like early 50s.
Yeah, he's early 50s.
Yeah, I think, you know, the character is like, oh, I'm getting too old for this shit, gotta retire.
Okay, early 50s for gangster is probably pretty old.
It's probably a stressful lifestyle for sure.
Do you have a movie MVP?
It's gonna have to be Hugh Grant as Fletcher. Just incredible. Like just completely... Not that it was like the best performance I've ever seen, but for Hugh Grant, who was such like so stamped in our minds as Hugh Grant, to disappear into this character and like you wouldn't have even known that it was Hugh Grant if you weren't, you know, able to recognize Hugh Grant.
My movie MVP, Charlie Hunnam.
Really?
I love Charlie Hunnam.
I mean, he's all right.
No.
That character doesn't do. He's not, I mean, he's believable, right? He's this kind of like coiled, like he's, you know, he's the fixer, he's the operator. And a couple times you kind of get a glimpse of the, you know, the Iron Fist and the Velvet Glove. But he's way less interesting than some of the people around him.
This is pure bias in the fact that I really like Charlie Hunnam in Pacific Rim. And he never got the credit he deserved for
that.
I
never saw that movie. That's the robots fighting the monsters.
Yes!
Yeah, I meant to watch it.
So good. Long overdue for not getting acknowledged for how great Pacific Rim is. But
it's also a weird criteria for choosing your favorite character from The Gentleman.
No.
Delivering a sort of posthumous achievement award to Charlie Hunnam in Pacific Rim.
No, but not let posthumous. Me finish my thought. It is also because...
I will not. Absolutely. Are you just arriving on the scene of the podcast?
It's also because Ray is really good at his job.
Yes, he's the most professional.
So good at his job. He like has all his bases covered. He texts his boss to be like, shit, you're about to get killed. Don't get in the car.
He's buttoned up. He's loyal. He's lethal, but he's not violent as he needs to be.
Exactly. He is like the epitome of Guy Ritchie characters. Like, you are supposed to be Ray. You'll never be Mickey Pearson, and you don't want to be Fletcher. So you're supposed to want to be Ray, who is like in servitude of this other guy. But he's so good at his job.
Yeah, Guy Ritchie loves this fantasy vision of like, gangster as a profession.
Yeah.
And yeah, Ray is definitely that. But even if you can overlook Hugh Grant's performance, Colin Farrell as Coach, he's so good. Like, every scene of his is just, it's delightful.
I mean, Colin Farrell is also really good, but Charlie Hunnam in that mustard sweater.
And he's got a big bushy beard, too. A lot of beards in this movie.
Anyway, I think this movie is worth watching despite the casual racism.
Yeah, so if you listen to this podcast, don't go to the theater because it will have left. And when it does come out on streaming, you know, be sure to catch it. It's an enjoyable if slight film.
I really liked it. Before we move on to the movie that we are going to be discussing next week, a little bit of listener feedback from Gail, who is a really good friend of mine.
Called you shrill.
Called me shrill. Gail,
Here I am every week, hooting and hollering, ranting and raving. The one time you lose your cool when talking about how to lose a guy in 10 days. The one time. What did Gail do? Tone police you.
Tone police.
Absolutely not.
Anyway, Gail, thank you for listening on your long drives to work and back from work. We appreciate it.
I have a little reader mail. A coworker of mine, friend of mine, Mary Grace, who a big fan of How to Lose a Guy. In fact, when she heard that I was doing this podcast, she didn't want to listen to any of them and didn't want to talk about them. Only wanted to talk to me when we had watched How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. And I told her, I was like, hey, I watched it. It was pretty good. I didn't really mind. What do you know? But then I was like, oh, but you need to listen to this podcast because Hemel tore that movie a new one. So she did, came over to me and said, you know what? I love this movie, but I agree with your friend.
Oh,
so
wow.
So I think you won her over. And, you know, as
you
we've talked, discussed
like
before.
You can still like the movie.
Yes, it's okay to like problematic things.
Yeah, it's okay.
We like The Gentlemen, and it's racist, sexist, homophobic, and fantastical.
And pretty good, too. But next week, we are going to be talking about
the final episode of 10 Movies Season 3, the McConaughey season.
We're going to be talking about EdTV.
You didn't give it any oomph to it. You didn't let the moment land. You just roll right into it.
You know why?
We're trying to have a podcast here.
We're going to be talking about EdTV.
EdTV. You probably haven't seen it. It came out literally 19 years ago. But, you know, go and watch it.
It's by Ron Howard.
We're going to watch it. It's by Ron Howard. I don't remember it, but we're going to watch it. I don't think I've seen it. Have you seen it?
I have not seen it.
I have not seen it either. So we're going to watch it. We want you to watch it, too, so we can all get in our easy chairs by the fire. We can all get in our lavishly appointed podcasting studios. Wherever we gather to discuss the McConaughey films, we will gather together as a community, as dare I say, a family, as we go into our final episode of the McConaughey season.
Thank you guys very much for hanging out with us. And remember that you can find us on Twitter at 10 Movies. And please remember to rate and review us on the podcast listening app of your choice. See you guys next week.